go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. My book, The Cognitive Rampage, A Scientific Approach to Self-Discovery, Change, and Life Optimization, is now available on Amazon. Search The Cognitive Rampage, and you'll find the second edition there, as well as the Kindle version as well. Thanks for tuning in to The Cognitive Rampage. Checking on the microphone. Sounding kind of funny. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. You may have a slight echo. We're no longer in the padded studio, thanks to Dr. Jack Cruz talking to me enough about how much I needed to not be surrounded by EMF. So this podcast, you might have a slight echo in the background. You may not. It could just be me here hearing it myself. But there's been a lot of new topics coming out on the Tribe of Change. So I want to give a shout out to everyone in the Tribe of Change. Hope you're taking care of you too. I know you are. And thanks for everything you do in the tribe. And if you're looking for the tribe, it's a closed group, not like it's top secret or anything, but just find us on Facebook, ask to join. And one of the 100 moderators, I'm sure we'll get to it and let you in. It's not like this secret thing, but it's a place where we share who we are, where we're transparent, really, where we question each other, but we do it with understanding, love, and all trying to learn from each other. And the reason I kind of talk about that is the person that's on the podcast today, well, is in my phone as Patricia Angel, but that's another word or another story perhaps we'll get to. But someone that has been really effective in the Tribe of Change really has shared who she is briefly on a video. So those of you in the tribe that are watching or listening to this podcast, you may have heard briefly about her story, but she means a lot to me. She has quite the story. You know, I've talked a lot about the podcast on TCRs, not just bringing on people that have done what most people are bringing on people on podcasts, whether they've written books or done these so-called things that are we call or deem as quotes great or amazing. When to me, the podcast TCR was also about bringing on unsung heroes, heroes that don't get a lot of back play or loud play or social media attention, when I really think it's the true heroes, right? And those are people I love to bring on the podcast as well. And there's quite an epic hero story that's going to grace our ears tonight as we hang out and listen as I chat with someone that means a lot to me. Thank you for sitting on the show and sharing this with me. Welcome to a show that you help produce, that you're a showrunner and help book guests and help keep the host sane. So you have a lot to do with it, but the first time actually sitting down. And thank you, Patricia Baugh, for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. It is, I have to admit, I'm used to being on the other side where I'm going, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be good. Let's book him or her or whatever. So this is actually my very first time to be doing this.
If that voice, you know, resonates with you, then perhaps you've heard it on the opening of the podcast. Patricia is the one that talks about and asks, if you will, for, you know, the donations and helping out the show. That's that voice that you hear that you probably heard before. We have it posted up on the website, et cetera. So I thought it was perfect for it. And if you listen to the intro too, as you have, if you're listening to this podcast, you just listened to the intro. She nails the love you at the end. It's perfect. And I love it. So thanks for even being that much a part of everything that I really believed in.
No, it's actually, you know, when you first initially asked me to do that, I was embarrassed or whatever. But when I actually pressed record, I didn't feel like a liar, so it was good. All of the things, even like on the... Nope. Anymore. Well, there we go.
Sorry Perfect. About that. We had a little dog run in that got a little crazy.
All right. Anyway, so when I was actually putting that together, I was actually just spouting off what I was actually feeling. So like when I said, Who doesn't want to be wowed? Or when I said,
that's the one that got me. It was who doesn't want to be wowed? I was like, fuck. Yeah. I'm done. Like, is that 21900 number?
No. And you know, it was like, you saw, I was like the last minute. I mean, it was really one of those things that, I mean, gosh, who doesn't want to be wowed?
Yeah. Well, if that's what we can do on the podcast, I always say it's not me. It's definitely would be the guests that we bring on or that are kind enough that you book, or Eric Fox or Philip Martin, some of the other Tribe of Change members and warriors that I love so much. They've been booking them. So for you to sit down and, you know, I've gotten to know you obviously out here in the desert for a while. And
which
I've got to
love so much.
I have not complained about the desert.
Oh my God. We'd be better off talking about what you didn't complain about Arizona.
Okay.
You became a serious Florida boy.
Well, I am a Florida boy and I'm not running from that anymore. And I don't care. I'm a little weird and perhaps maybe even been on the cop show once, but,
perhaps.
No, I'm kidding. No, but, you know, they tell you if you want to find God, go to the desert. And I have discovered that is true. Is because you pray every day, please make it rain and make the heat go away, God, or just kill me now, something, because I think that's what they mean.
You know, I have actually lived here for, I think it's 19 years in a row now, because I lived here when I was actually a lot younger. But I actually didn't realize how hot it was until you kept reminding me.
Until I'm around pointing it out 24/7?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's hot because I faint.
Faint. Well, hot is not even the word. I mean, it's, you just walk outside and you literally have a little mini panic attack because you're like, there's nowhere to go. It's just this blanket of heat everywhere.
It is definitely an oven when you open the door.
You're like, turn off the fucking blow dryer. There's a wind warm factor in this motherfucker. It is crazy out here, man, but I'm looking to be back in Florida. Before we'll tail off and talk about anything, and go far, which we'll probably do anyway, the brief video that you shared, you know, with the Tribe of Change about where you came from, your history. I know how difficult that was for you to put that out there and all the emotions you went through, but to walk into it, if you could set the scene for people that didn't see that video, that didn't hear that. And you know, you're a great storyteller. I've heard you tell enough stories. So as you tell your story, if you will, I'm just listening and I'll try to after I shut up off this tangential run. But as you tell it, set the scene of what it's like and, you know, what's around as Grace and Jersey are going to have an interesting time behind us. But set that scene, if you will, you know, for people that don't know and didn't see that.
Okay. Well, first of all, a lot of times I'm reluctant to tell that story because it, in my mind, it's such a small part of my life. I mean, it might be bigger to somebody else, but it's like way past, way back then. I know a lot of people will say, oh.
Now, is that just a tool maybe you used along the way, perhaps to maybe get over it or push by it to just kind of say, it's so long ago, or does it really feel that way with you, or do you really believe that? Is it?
No, it genuinely, it feels that way. I mean, I notice little, every now and then, like if I see something that I had not experienced, or if I, a song or whatever, that's when it'll just kind of pop up of, oh, or that was cool. Or, I mean, maybe they'll understand it more when I talk more about it, but honestly, I don't look at it as like the full part of me. I know a lot of times people tell their story and they kind of like stick with that.
It becomes them, right? It becomes their narrative, right? I'm the abused child, right? I'm the, you know, pick a trauma that somebody experiences that allows to define them, if you will.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I do know that. I think I do have a selective memory. I choose to remember the things that, make me happy. Like my childhood, there's a lot of things that made me happy, but I just, the things that probably weren't normal or wouldn't make somebody else happy, I kind of just focused on the things that did make me happy, that made me smile, made me think about, like when I would see other people's lives, there wasn't a time when I wanted their life. I might've wanted, their sense of family, or that's really all. Well, anything else I didn't.
So go back to the scene, right? We're jumping forward, assuming people know what it's like, right? So they're yelling at their phone or their car right now. Well, what the hell?
Right? Okay. Sorry. All right. So I was raised in a very religious family upbringing. So, it was a Mormon base, but eventually,
kind of streamed off into its own religion. And I was much younger. Like I left the whole thing when I was 15, right? But I was raised that way. I basically lived in a 3-bedroom house in the city of Glendale with most of my siblings and my father. Some of the times he had more than one wife. He had several wives, but it didn't like when it didn't register to me that way because there was no bickering. There was no, I never felt like that sense that there was cheating going on. So when I was little, I just thought
it was just normal to you.
Yeah.
It was just normal that, you know, your dad had what, 4?
Yeah. Well, he had 3.
Okay. So mm-hmm. 3 wives. And now this is all taking place in what city?
In Glendale.
In Glendale. Okay.
Yeah. So in Arizona. So anyway,
you brought how many siblings though? You kind of brushed in a 3-bedroom house with the siblings with 3 wives.
Well, there was not always a full count of the same siblings living there, but so realistically, there's probably 20 at a time, but overall I have 32.
32 brothers. Mm-hmm. My God.
Yeah. Well, there's 32 of us, so I have 31.
Right, right. So, yeah. But still 32. What, I mean, age ranges from all
over. Yeah, over 50. Yeah, from probably like, I'd say 55 down to nowadays, 30.
Now, I can hear people saying cult. I hear it already, right? I mean, I thought it, right? When I heard the story, it's like, okay, you lived in a cult. What's the comparison to that word? Is that fair?
Well, yeah. I mean, cult, you can put it on anything. You can put it on religion, or you can also put it on exercise. Like lots of people reference to different things like CrossFit. I was into CrossFit for a little while.
I'm sorry.
And shush. I learned a lot in there. I learned the good things and the bad things, and I made a lot of good friends. So I'm not anti-trying things. I might try and recognize what sucked about it or what wasn't smart about it, but I still took some really positive things from it. I made a lot of good friends.
Yeah.
That is one thing. Like nowadays, there's lots of people that, you know, want to join gyms and they just go in and go out like a, you know, a zombie. Whereas these other things that there's, you know, people that are in yoga, people that are in CrossFit, all those things, they do build a strong sense of family. I think that a lot of them are probably actually even looking for. Maybe that's why I enjoyed group settings, because yeah. I felt that sense of family.
I think for sure the reason, we talked about it before, about, you know, an attraction to joining a group, if you will, and where that may come from. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but we're getting off track, right?
I know you want to stick to that. I have to admit, I do avoid that. I'm not sure why, just because I've never really spoken about it. I didn't really start to speak about it until my dad passed away. He passed away about 21 years ago. But yeah, so we lived in this house. We slept on the floor. Or I shouldn't say on the floor. Our routine was we would have a foam rollout and we'd put a clean sheet on it. And it was really hot, so we didn't really ever have blankets. I remember sometimes we would leave the back sliding door open so there would be more like air. But, you know, there'd be everybody laying on the floor in the living room and in the kitchen. We had 2 televisions, one that had the sound that worked and one that did not. So we just stacked them. It was kind of a treat for us when we would be able to rent a VCR. And when my dad would come home, we would rent a color TV as well. So it was like, woohoo! We would, you know, slice up the fruit and maybe make some homemade pizza. That was like a party for us. We didn't really ever go anywhere. Like for our birthday was the only time that I ever, once a year, I would go out to dinner with my parents. That was everybody's birthday.
Once a year.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm still a 3-bedroom home with that many siblings in the floor. But this for you was just normal though, right? This is just what life was. I mean, the neighbors anything.
Well, we had some pretty good stories going on for the neighbors, but I didn't even care about.
So you make shit up about why there's 30 people in the house.
Yeah. We would make a lot of stuff up. For starters, my dad had a twin. He didn't have a twin, but my mother did. So in case somebody would accidentally see someone, I was like, that's just my dad's twin brother.
So a religious based cult family thing off mm-hmm. of Mormon telling the siblings to lie to the neighbors about what we're doing.
Well, you have to, don't get me wrong. I'm happy that I'm no longer a part of that, but let's play devil's advocate here. If you're protecting something, what else are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You're going to go, yes.
Well, it just seems contradictory to. I know that, you know, your father claimed to be a prophet, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he was even written about in a couple of books, et cetera.
Yeah. He was. He was in a book called Cult Insanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it is crazy, but those are the kind of things where there's almost like, in my mind, no explanation. I think sometimes people truly convince themselves, so they really don't feel like it's not true. But then when you're, even as I was young, I would recognize, excuses. If it didn't turn out the way they predicted after their revelation, then they misread it and they're saddened about them misreading it, but they at least got the forewarning from God.
So it was full on dad had visions and prophets and foresaw things, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, growing up, I laughed a lot, played with all my siblings. I was mostly around my brothers. My sisters probably didn't like me too much. maybe because I didn't want to have necessarily that lifestyle.
Were you rebellious from that? I mean, help people's heads out, because I'm sure some people are thinking, Amish wear, right? Walking around long skirt.
You would never, honestly, I would say the most different thing in the very beginning growing up and stuff was we couldn't wear things that showed our shoulders. We just wore like t-shirts and we couldn't wear sleeveless. So the rules were like, these are some quick basics. We couldn't wear sleeveless. We didn't drink caffeine. We didn't watch rated R movies. We didn't cuss. Nobody in my family drank.
What's wrong with that? I'm kind of listening to this going in there with a lot of people.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there are some people that had a quote normal upbringing, but like yourself, there was things that happened to you that happened to me. I couldn't imagine that would be way more detrimental to me as a person today than the things that I went through. So when people, that's what somebody else might not say the same thing. They might've been like, what the heck? What are you talking about? I mean, I do have some, like on the outside, I would make really good friends with people and I would be afraid that, I'd have to leave like in the middle of the night. So I would kind of restrict to how close I'd get.
You'd have to be afraid you'd have to leave in the middle of the night?
Well, because you never knew when you were going to move. So they would say.
Oh, so you just didn't stay in Glendale all the time then?
No. I mean, we stayed there quite a long time, actually. I'm talking about as I got older, like just when I actually made like friends. I did have like a friend across the street, Donnie. He lived across the street from me. And he was like one of the kids. It was just like all the same thing. But realistically, nobody ever knew where I lived or anything like that because it was out of the school zone where I would walk to school. So we were really pretty good at keeping it to ourselves. It was a mystery.
It's just there's just 20 people that live in there randomly next door and they have twins and a lot of people show up.
Well, we were, they were pretty smart about it though. We didn't, like the kids did play outside, but those look like neighborhood kids because we didn't look alike.
Oh. The dogs are going to have fun out here.
Yeah. We didn't look alike. So it was just like, they just assumed that was a really popular house.
That's it. Just a popular
house. It was the corner house. So there was always kids playing out front and mom didn't work. She stayed home. So it's not like they had a bunch of people walking in and out that were different.
How many kids? You need that many moms at least.
I honestly kick myself every day for the times that I knocked on the bathroom door when my mom was using the bathroom. I now feel like the giant bitch for going, gosh, I was just going to say something, because she'd be like, can I just use the bathroom without anybody knocking on the freaking door?
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. And that to this day, I every time I'm in there and somebody would knock on my bathroom door, I think of her. I think, gosh, I could have given her that.
Well, you are the master of the silver lining. You tend to find silver linings pretty quick. And do you think maybe that came from, all right, I don't want to go too far, but when did you kind of recognize, because were you allowed to go to like public school? Was everybody?
We went to public school. We weren't allowed to spend the night at people's friends' house when we were younger. Mm-hmm. When I was in like seventh and eighth grade, my parents got a little bit more lenient, but they were really strict. I mean, some of this stuff it's just so stupid to me, but one of my friends, Claire, she threw me a surprise party and all the girls were going to go spend the night in some cabin. Everybody was ready, had their bags packed. And cause I'd never had a surprise party or a party for that matter, really. And they wouldn't let me go. they just didn't want me to be overnight spending time with people where they could influence me in a different way. I don't know.
Well, when did you notice? Were you rebellious from the beginning? I mean, was it Bible reading every day? Like walk me like,
we had Well, on Sundays, we would have like a 2.5 minute talk. So one of the kids would get up there and teach something for 2.5 minutes. We would open with hymns from the books. And I was actually the little director that would do that. I did that, and I would sing some songs sometimes. I think my dad actually, he always just thought I was the biggest performer. So I wouldn't even be interested in it, but he'd be like, you're going to be the best at it. So I just go do it. So I would go and do that stuff in front of everybody, but they'd do the church and we'd do the sacrament. They would teach us a lesson and then they would plan for the next week. That's it. It really wasn't like the typical, like, a lot of churches, you know, they go Sunday, Wednesday, and they're all kinds of, or their attire is different or whatever. It wasn't like that. We really actually blended in with the rest of the world. And that's why it was probably less detrimental to me, because I was still able to do that. But I always knew there was obviously something very different. But it's kind of like one of those things, if you wake up and someone says blue is a beautiful color, you just look at blue like no big deal, where everybody else looks at blue like, oh, blue is such a depressing color. You just
so
don't know better.
It's what life was to you. So at that, so you'd wake up to that. Hey, that's what it is, and that's just what's normal. But what are the history, the roots behind where your dad's prophecy belief of himself? Where, walk me through that. Was it just one day? Did he wake up? Were you born already? Like, where was it? Was this his walk continually?
I honestly can tell you, and I'm being truthful. One thing that was not really ever praised or looked upon as good is to say why. So we were never really allowed to say why. We were just told what and when. And if you questioned it, you were kind of looked down upon, or like you were, and it really was like growing up, you had to make sure that you said the right things so that you're still in the in crowd. Because it's immediate when you feel like you possibly could be looked at as a bad seed or something negative.
So really the whole group would almost kind of oust you, if you will.
Oh, yeah,
kind of just
sure.
Ignore you or something like that.
And yeah. There was a short time where I was, you know, kind of like frowned upon. Like when I was when I started high school, my parents wanted me to, basically when I was 15 years old, they wanted me to stop school and start working. And I had a lot of friends and I enjoyed my life outside of home because I didn't like home. Not really. I mean, I wasn't hateful or anything, but
Well, what was it? You talk about it. It was this great thing that you knew better and everybody was,
eating
pizza and having sleepovers.
No, it was kind of just like a orphanage or a community home. There was always people in the living room, always people in the kitchen. When you go downstairs, they built down, you know, when we moved to Colorado, we had a house that had, you know, two stories and had, we built in rooms in the basement. So everything was just kind of like a business almost. So as sad as that is, I don't honestly have very many memories of like hugs or, conversations really.
Really? That many people?
Conversations were like this. I'm going to go hide under this table. We're going to turn off all the lights and you guys all come find me. You know, it was really like an orphanage, like a bunch of kids. And my poor mother, she was everybody's servant, you know, constantly doing laundry, constantly cooking, constantly.
Oh, the laundry. Holy shit. Oh, I couldn't imagine.
We had clotheslines in the backyard. Probably I would say 10 rows, and we were constantly running the washer and the dryer, or I don't even know that we had a dryer. But we definitely had some clotheslines.
Not much attention, though, can be paid individually to each children. I mean, 3 and 4 can be too much to where parents can't pay that kind of needed attention and love, affection toward, much less 32 of you.
Yeah, I honestly can tell you, now that I'm older and I have children of my own, I actually look back and go, I have no idea how you even managed to not call me everybody's name instead of 3 of my siblings' names. You know, I'm more now living in life and doing all those things. I'm more just regretful that I wasn't, more helpful.
Are you kidding? I know enough of the story. I don't, oh, whatever with the more
well,
helpful.
Well, to my mother.
Oh, okay. All right.
No,
I don't
know. To my mom.
Sorry.
I mean, just to my mom. I mean, I obviously, I did give up my youth.
So was it like raising your little brothers and sisters and everybody kind of had to chip in for what was happening?
My older sisters did that more so. They raised the children as far as like feeding and cooking and stuff like that. We all had a list of chores of who had to do what. Like I would clear the kitchen. My brother would do the dishes. What we had to do dishes every night. The younger ones, I was
no
in the
shortage of
group.
Workers. That's for sure. I mean, if you're passing out chores on a list and a to-do list.
No, but it still sucked. You were doing dishes. Four people might be doing dishes, but it's for 25 people.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah,
And so we'd go in and do that. And it was just kind of like routine, but I didn't want to get stuck in the routine and they wanted me to quit and just be full-time with them, you know, and contribute. And you were basically, we would call it the jar and we would go to work, come home, put our money in the jar. And then it was distributed to help raise everybody, all the adults.
And meanwhile, what's dad's responsibility? What's he doing?
He was basically the person that would make sure everything was running right. He was also, you know, the consultant and doing things like that.
Consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means.
That means making sure that everything is running the way that it should be, I'm assuming.
Okay. Well, did he bring the money in?
I don't know.
How do you pay for 32 kids?
Honestly, I didn't even care. I didn't think about those things. I was so excited that I was able to go to high school. So I was like, yes, I'll change my name for 4 hours. So I drove to a city that nobody knew me, or I didn't drive, but my sister dropped me off and I was 14 years old. And of course, you know, I said I was older so that I could serve alcohol and I would work my shift and I would wait on the sidewalk in Montbello, which is not the greatest neighborhood. And at 1:30, I would wait for my ride to pick me up. And I was 15. Literally, I would sit next to the tracks on the train. And they'd pick me up and I would start my morning and go to school. And my friends, I only had maybe one or two friends that really knew my life.
But a few did know though.
Yeah,
I mean,
two.
You obviously knew by then. And we keep skipping over it. Where did the money come from? And what's the history roots behind your father's so-called prophecy? Where's that come from? Was it around? Were you born into it? Was it something that, hey, he owned an electrician business and all of a sudden
Just heavily involved in the different churches. Like, because I was born in Mexico. So I don't have a lot of the memories that I have of Mexico are just going back when my mother would give birth to another child. Those are the only times that I remember. Mm. But aside from that, that's maybe why it doesn't affect me so much because I wasn't one of the older ones. It's just the way that they chose to live. So
dad was always a prophet when you were born.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was just the history.
Yeah. It was just like what I was into. I mean, my mother was not his first. So, you know, I think she was the third. Yeah. And so it was just kind of normal. I mean, the ways that it affects me today, on positive and maybe negative, the positive is I was able to just figure life out because I already had to. And so when I got married at 17, I was just like, I could handle anything. I probably look like a freaking monkey with my babies.
Well, so from, I think you sort of referenced it. So from 16, when you kind of realized, no, I choose public school. I choose those friends. I choose the job that I have that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you weren't kicked out of the house, though. You weren't exiled,
no, they,
if you will.
Well, I was excommunicated, yes.
Oh.
I was because I admitted that I was not following the church, but I also wasn't living the same standards that they were. And I was open with it with them. You know, they asked me, hey, have you done this? And I said, yes. And so meaning have I slept with this person or not this person, but have I slept with someone yet? So when I did tell them, yeah, I did. I had done that before. And that was like a huge sin. Mm-hmm. And they were obviously disappointed, but I was also relieved saying, I don't think I'm a bad person because I did that.
Was there any influence at 15, 16, whether it's music or friends or something that kind of pulled you to go, hey, you know, that's not typically how people live and raise. Was there an influence there?
You know, I would say my biggest influence just that I never felt unloved, but I didn't also feel loved. So when I started to experience people caring about me, like my friend Claire's parents, they would offer to pay for me to join teams or to be in cheerleading, all those things. And sometimes my parents would let me and sometimes they'd be offended and say no. So I didn't get to be a part of the team. Those are the times where I would look out the window like, because I felt like I could have been really good at it. Or I was on a volleyball team and my grandma only wanted me to take care of her for her cataract surgery. And she took me out of they took me out of the tournament and the whole weekend. They've got all those other kids, but I had to go and take care of her. Little things like that where I just wanted to go, gosh, can I just be the kid?
Yeah, it's like childhood or something else. You don't really get a chance to have a childhood, it seems.
Well, I was never an adult without a dependent. So I don't really. And even when I was a child, I was still taking care of people.
I still do that a lot today. But well, you mentioned married at 17. Was this married off at 17? Was this picked for you? Was it a sign? I mean, was this the rebellious act? Was this the what got you? Now, when you say excommunicated, before we get to the other part, mm-hmm. I mean, is it truly just like don't come back here? You can't live here?
No, it depends on the person, first of all. Mm. One, I was helping with the income, so I don't think they're going to completely get rid of me. Mm. We just came to an agreement that I was no longer a part of the church. And when they would hold church, I just would be downstairs separated.
So you even stayed away. So how long?
No, I didn't just stay away. I wasn't allowed.
Oh, you weren't allowed. So as everybody's in there, you just had to
be downstairs,
kind of isolate and sit with yourself then.
Yeah. And that's okay.
What was that like? Did you feel like you were missing, like you were doing wrong? You were missing out? Did you feel like they were all wrong or
no?
What was it like? I mean,
I was more affected and more saddened when I would see other people that were excommunicated because of maybe their behavior, and I would see their pain and I would go, oh, you can go back. You know what I mean? If they liked it there, but I didn't feel like, I just felt like this, like I haven't been lying to any of you guys anyway. You know, like with all my siblings, they all just knew who I was. They probably didn't necessarily think it was the smartest because I was the wild one, but I wasn't reckless. I was just free. I would just do what I wanted to do. You know, I was bad. I would sneak out and go to parties and be like a normal teenager, I guess. Only I was a little bit smarter probably. I would hide my robe in the bushes in the backyard and pretend I'm bringing back in the dog. When I would sneak back in, I had a messy hair.
You had to. You had to get around the...
They didn't even notice, though.
What? How do you get out of the house with 32 people and no one notices? I guess maybe that's easier.
Say that again. You get out of the house with 32 people.
Yeah, you're right. Never mind. Yeah,
I would just literally just like jump the fence and they wouldn't necessarily notice it. But you know, if my mother was listening, she'd probably say, oh, Patricia, you know, I knew that. I just knew you were going to be you, so I'd let you be you.
Well, there's kind of conflict there for me. I don't think Grace could be noisier than she's been in the last hour.
I know. I bought them bones, hoping that they would.
Yeah, she knows like we're live, so it's like let me sling bones around and let me start. I don't even know where I was going.
Well, I can tell you this. I know you really want some huge meat on my upbringing as far as like what really happened as, you know, with having so many siblings.
No, 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 it's not. I'm not 60 minutes. I'm not trying to pull that out. That's no.
I'm saying I would tell you if I had that feeling of.
No, I know you don't, but that's the beautiful part. That's what I mean is the reason I wanted to talk about it is because as some people may hear it and as some people tell that narrative, right, that have experienced an odd kind of life or a different one, right, mm-hmm. something different or difficult, they tell the story in a different manner.
Yeah.
But the way that you've always talked about the story, this was kind of my like sneak in, was I knew how you tell the story. So it may sound as if I'm prodding to get some meat, like an investigative, a current affair reporter. But I'm trying to do that because what I'm showing is even at the different angles to where you could switch the tone of your narrative to be this woe is me story of how bad it was and how bad you had it. And I came out of it resilient. You didn't paint that picture. And you have a natural knack somehow, it seems, from a young age to find the silver lining and be almost a natural or a master to find the silver lining. So I knew that's how you'd tell the story.
Yeah.
So as I came in, I'm really pointing out that people listening to this are smart enough to know it's some deep, dark shit wherever daddy comes from with that. I know a couple of facts that I won't put out there, but they can put it enough together to where it's dangerous. Okay.
Yeah.
And so even poking from that to what you experienced to exile, right, all these ideas, and still your narrative spoke in a tone of, it's what it is, and I'm fine. It's so, you know, you just lived anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I've gotten to know you, that's something that seems still natural, right? It's still going, that's what it is, and just moving through it. And such a spin on being able to look at what you experienced, how you were raised, what you missed out on, what wasn't there, and even some darker things that are pretty fucked up that I know that daddy did, et cetera. Not with you directly, et cetera. I don't want to imply that. No, I don't want to imply that. But even through that, though, the story that you tell and how you tell it is the inspiration to me, is the camouflage to me, is you don't tell it, you know, like, oh, it was tragic and sad, and yet still, you know, we managed to find a way. It wasn't told like this dark day. And there's this natural way to tell it. And so I apologize if it sounds like I'm poking, but what I'm
I know it's actually a very interesting story, like the whole depth of it, you know?
Well, I also bring it up because there was a lady on Joe Rogan's podcast that was talking about being from a similar type faction.
Yeah, I remember that.
And as we listened to that podcast, all you were doing was yelling at her. You were telling her, that's bullshit. You know they told you to say that. You're not out. You were yelling at this.
Well, I did feel like she was being a people pleaser. Like, I honestly felt like the entire time she was talking, like she was talking to her mother, like, or wanting to be heard from them. And that's the only way that she could be heard. So she was pointing out the positive things. Well, and
we
stuff
both
like
were
that.
Like, she's still in it. She's selling it right now.
Well, I probably sound similar to that, where I'm like still protecting things like that. But
a little bit. Yeah. You do sound a little, hesitant to talk about or get into it or go further. And so to say, like, we move past it, or if it really, no, we just can't talk about it, is that fear brainwash thing still in there of going, I can't say it. There's darkness will come out of the walls and find me or something.
Sure. It does exist there somehow, just a teeny bit or whatever, but I look at it like this. I'm actually just telling my story. Mm. And so I don't think that's the way that I can justify it to myself. I can say that when I see the way that it's affected a couple of my sisters that still dwell on, oh, why doesn't this person talk to me anymore? Why don't they like me? Unfortunately, I don't feel that way at all. So I can't relate. I go, who freaking cares? They're douchebags, or they don't deserve your love, or, you know, I truly feel that way, but it has not been that easy on a few of my siblings. And I mean, I don't ever want to be that person where they allow that. It's like someone living in your brain.
Now, did you always have that confidence? Was it just, I'm an 8-year-old confident kid that didn't care that I was raised in a semi cult with 32 people that did some odd things that didn't live. I don't see it. I'm just brave. And that's all it is. Was it always like that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I told you that story at one time. One time I asked my mother, I always just felt like she just didn't really like me. I mean, there was some, you know, when you have people around you, you can tell if somebody likes you. Just the way they look at you. Like if somebody says, oh, that's Adam.
Why do you think that though? For like, why? What would make you think that?
I could tell just by the way I was treated. I mean, I'm not a fool. And so finally, as an adult, I just said to her, I said, why don't you like me? Like, I was really honest. And I just said, just tell me, like, what's wrong? Like, why me? And, sorry, it makes me a little bit emotional.
And what'd she say? One, it's brave enough to say something.
No,
like
it was
that.
Actually a good answer. She said, because when you were from the age of 5, you never feared anything. You never met a stranger. When people would talk to you, you would have an immediate answer. I just didn't know how to communicate with you. You would, even if you didn't know how to swim, you would jump in and you would just figure it out. And so I was intimidated by you. I didn't speak as proper as you, or
that's a detailed response.
I didn't know how to act around you. And I said to her, okay, well, if it was my daughter telling me that, I would be going, oh my gosh, that's so cool about you, or I love that about you. I wouldn't handle it the way that she did. I think sometimes that's one thing that has probably affected me the most is sometimes people think that just because you're confident or you're strong, it doesn't mean you don't need like just someone to tell you that you're smart or you're funny or even that they love you or.
Well, it seems like you didn't get a lot of that. Like it was too busy. It was.
Yeah, but when you're confident, people think that you don't need that.
No, that's what I mean is like it would. Well, I think most of us do. We just try to deny that fact, really. But the fact that you never really got that. You never really got that. In how do you with 32, 31 siblings?
But that's just it. I didn't feel like I felt like I got like attention and that was confused with love.
Mm.
I was the one that was always joking or making, I was always in front of the camera joking around. I was the troublemaker, but it was like my father would make me feel like I was the greatest troublemaker. You know, like
what was that relationship like? I mean, did you think he was a prophet at the time? Was it like that? Was it, I don't know, what would a relationship like
that? No, I just
like
didn't,
that?
I didn't fear him. So he sort of acted normal around me.
Mm. So he kind of ran the house with a fear, if you will.
Yeah, I think so. Everybody was just like afraid of what he might know or what he might actually, it might be right. Right. So it's a constant fear that you might be in trouble if you're not acting right. So I did get some things from him, which was just admiration that made me feel like maybe I wasn't so bad.
Mm.
But even saying all that, I mean, yeah, it does hurt your feelings or, you know, when you think about, often say, oh, I wish I had this or that when it comes to that. But there's some amazing, wonderful things about my mother, you know? So I don't like, I forgive her for not being able to be the mother that I needed.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's possible for her to even do.
So there's no, like, I don't resent my mother. But it does sometimes hurt. Like,
well, her response was more or less of, I can't be like you, so... I don't like, I mean, she didn't say no though. That's the shitty part. She didn't go, I do like you. She was just like, well, I don't like you because you're way better than me or you do a lot of things that I may see as bad or we deem as bad, but a lot of other people would see as good or wish they could do.
She probably just didn't know how to communicate that way.
Sure.
Just like for her to say, she actually responded more fed up with me. You know, like, you want to know, like, if this is bothering you so bad, let me tell you. But, I mean,
I'm surprised you didn't turn anybody with you, like the Jerry Maguire movie, where you're, like, walking out going, who's coming with me?
But see, this is just it. Because we're all different ages, everybody left on there, who's coming with me at different ages.
Mm.
Like, I have to admit, there were some times where I would feel like maybe I'm supposed to still hang out with them or something, you know, like be a part of it.
Sure.
Not the religion, but you would miss that or whatever. But after my dad died, everything else kind of died.
Mm. So the cornerstone of it all, once the prophet goes, then it all goes.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't communicate with many of my siblings. I talk to maybe four or five, but I'm okay with that. Like my new family is my children and the people that I love.
So you're 17 and you get married.
Yeah. It was not an arranged marriage or anything like that. I met him at a Pizza Hut. I was a waitress. I actually didn't meet him. I met his mother. And she just thought we would be great together.
In the religion too? Was he also involved?
No, not at all.
Hmm.
No, so they took me out of school and they moved me to Arizona. And that's where I met them. So I was in Colorado going to school and, working, and in the middle of the night, they said, we're moving. So I packed one little memory box. They actually told us to pack a box of everything that we want to make sure we get back. Right. And everybody's packing a little box about, you know, like 8x10, whatever of their possessions. And I remember sitting there and going, I'm never going to see this stuff again. And this is me putting everything that means something to me in here. So I separated it and gave a small shoebox to my friend Nikki and said to her, can you just keep this until if you ever see me again? And she's like, well, what are you talking about? I couldn't tell her that I was moving. So she's like, yeah, she, you know, cause I was kind of that way anyway, where people would be like, okay, just let me know if you need, you know, it was like always on the DL something. And so she kept it. And then 20 years later on Facebook connected with me and she still had it.
She still had, what'd, yeah. What'd you put in?
It was like a little time capsule. It was pictures and letters and stuff like that. Memory stuff. Yeah. It's funny.
That's cool that she held on to that. I mean, to pack it all up. And now how did you move 32 people? Well, that's 31 siblings, but there's also four wives and a prophet. How do you move that many people?
Oh, it was just always separate. We didn't always leave at the same time. It was very calculated. It was like in the middle of the night, you know, half the people would leave. So there wasn't a lot of moving going on. And I moved back to Arizona and that's when it kind of like completely separated.
There's like a whole military logistics thing going on. Like, all right, group one and two, you 17, you go before 5 a.m.
You know, it was like that. It was like, have you ever seen the movie? I don't know. You may not have. It's a while ago, but River Phoenix plays in it. It's called Running on Empty. And he basically has to live a different life in a different city and in the middle of the night leave. And that was how I felt.
Now, so how many times did you move to Fellowship?
Not that many, actually. I mean, I lived in two homes in Glendale. The one in Glendale I lived for a really long time, like 10 years.
Yeah, so not too much moving.
And then Colorado until I got married and I lived in Alaska. And
I still wish I knew where the income came from.
I told you. It was. Think about it. If you have that many kids and everybody's bringing in a pay for the evening, you put it all together in the jar.
All I can think of is the TV series Shameless.
No, it was far from that, but that's a good show.
That's all I can think about.
Yeah, no. What's funny is it was a mixture.
Instead of a drunk, they have a prophet. So, I mean, kind of both.
Well, no. And, you know, it's funny because there are so many different characters. You know, I had the brothers that were all, they were all like, you know, working out and thinking, you know, they were the leaders, the entrepreneurs.
Now, were they jonesing for like was it like a Game of Thrones thing? Like they're jockeying for the next person to be the prophet? Were there other male prophets? Was this passed down or?
No, well, it was passed down, but it wasn't what their focus was. Their focus was who could set up their bigger company or stuff like that, bring in the money for their families and stuff like
that. So like most religions became corrupt eventually and became about who can bring in more money.
Yeah. I mean, sadly, it was very much so a popularity thing.
Really?
Yeah. But see, I think I was popular because I didn't care. It's just like the ones that wanted it or needed attention or behave that way. It was just like frowned upon, you know, or like, oh, she's weak or he's weak. Like I would never cry in front of anybody.
So at 17, you get married, which I can only relate to through my mother, who was married at 17 as well, and had her first child at 17. And perhaps my brother,
that was really good. Sorry.
I let the swallow go. Thanks.
I apologize.
It was funny. You know, my brother and I were probably like raising four people for my poor mama. But it's still 31, 32. But I'm married at 17 and basically a kid on the way already at 17 years old.
Yeah.
And moving beyond just that, how would you define that? What would be the adjective of that childhood?
Of my childhood?
Yeah.
I was the barefoot walking outside alone.
It's funny to not funny, but it's just odd to hear about an alone described childhood with 31 siblings. Right. But then when you think, you know, you go, okay, I guess you're really in your own world, right? Nobody really talked to grow from, I guess, but, so alone would be the descriptive of that childhood.
Yeah. Cause there was never really, in-depth conversations. If you started to become a deep person, you were looked like at the person that's kind of like
you're rebelling.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even come home and be like, guess what I learned in school? This isn't true or
well,
that's true.
Yeah. There was definitely none of that.
Yeah. Well, you said you couldn't ask why.
Yeah. To nothing. I mean, it was literally just, and then as I got older, when I would start to, I don't know the word fight back, but I guess I did fight back. That's when they were like, we probably should let her go. But he was, even then when I was threatening to run away, I ran away like a couple times when I was like 15. He still was offering to pay to have me live in an apartment just so I wouldn't go become a runaway.
Man, I couldn't imagine being at the crossroads because, I mean, the other things that cross the line essentially to me and most people in the world that he does, again, not directly towards you, but, and then still supporting you in your rebellion almost at the same time. Like, I couldn't imagine in that trying to find the balance of where do you go? Yes, this was great. I had food. I had this. But at the same time, what the fuck were you thinking? You know what I mean? Like that's what I can't understand that. And I can't, it's even hard for me to grasp what that must be like.
You just kind of look at it where this is how I looked at it. I had a term to serve. And so while I was there, I was just going to make the most of it. And that's why I got a job and did all those things. And I really, in my mind, was viewing all of this as temporary. So I didn't feel like I was lost or anything like that. The sad part really is for me is the people that did not walk away with it, that feeling. Like even that girl that you were talking about on Joe Rogan, I mean, she really got into it deep, whereas that's not how I ever felt like I was. So I didn't feel like I was brainwashed and believed it and was like definitely there. I mean, I can't lie. There were times where you'd go, maybe this is just where I'm supposed to be.
Where you'd almost like cave in.
Yeah.
What was that? What was any time like that?
Well, like they would baptize you and they would baptize you either in a lake or in a swimming pool. And I did want the acceptance of them to feel like maybe I was a good person again since I was so wild in high school. Mm-hmm. So I wanted that feeling that they would believe in me as a person because I wasn't like them. So they did do that. But
what was one of those times though, when you were really going, oh, maybe I'll just cave, like, I'll just adapt or conform.
I think just when you're around all of your siblings and they're trying to, make your husband at the time feel like he's a part of the group. And so you're like, maybe I'll have this sense of family, you know, maybe we should try that or just to belong somewhere. And then you recognize minutes later, what?
Right. Well, that seems normal to me, right? A lot of people, they live the crazy life, right? Then they have the kid and then get married. Then it's churches Sunday, Wednesday, right? Hiding the fact, but Saturday, boy, you know, it's getting that. But my point is that seems what a lot of, you know, that's a typical flow, right? Is the idea is no matter how crazy it was in the back of our childhood's mind somewhere, you know, once the kid comes out or once the marriage starts, right? We kind of go, okay, maybe I'll read religion or maybe I'll, you know, focus this way. So it's kind of a natural pull to you then.
Yeah, but I wasn't pulled so far that way. I was more pulling for my husband at the time to fit in with my siblings. It was definitely not.
So he wouldn't adapt to it?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Then, so he wasn't a fan?
No, he was not a fan, no.
Okay.
Which I wasn't really either, but I just, like I said, I was more like going, I didn't have anything. I mean, everything was always somebody else's life, you know, like forever. It was just, I've never shared my life outside of, you know what I mean, since then. So it's been difficult for me because I'm so used to having everything be where you're selective on showing who people want, what you want them to see about your life.
Oh, you were trained like a Navy SEAL to do that. You got to, why are so many people at your house? Oh, well, there's two twins. And then with some people visited.
Oh, I was the biggest hustler ever when it came to that kind of stuff. There would be a story out of me so quick. I was definitely one of those that was like, I promise you, if something happened, they would probably put me on the floor to go, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
You would have been the spokesperson for Donald Trump's campaign.
Yes. No, hardly, but yeah, I guess so. If I'm going to be a hot, awesome liar.
Well, they're fired every other week anyway. So, I mean, so I want to, I'll fast forward through, let's just call it not the optimal marriage, right? Okay. We won't put that out there out of respect for the little ones that aren't so little.
Yeah.
But somehow you managed to get through, let's just say, was not a constructive marriage. There was a lot one-sided and let's just say had some brushes with violence and things, right?
Yeah.
And that was what, 14 years?
Yeah, we were married 14 years. Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of one of those things, again, where you go, you just kind of put your shoulder to the wheel and push on. That's a religion song, a Mormon song.
Oh, well, oh no, I'm zapping you back.
Yeah, I was being funny for anybody that's Mormon. They would laugh at that.
Oh,
well, it's just like when people say,
well, they're dumb.
Oh my heck.
We say fuck a lot on this show and we're drinking a beer. I doubt that's happening. Yeah. No. Well, no, the prophet can watch, right? The leader can watch that stuff. The, Sorry about that, y'all.
From the grave.
Yeah, sorry about that. No, I don't mean that. I meant anybody. I got off track, man. I'm like,
what's that? Okay. You were referencing getting out of the marriage that wasn't so great.
Yeah, well, you were wrapping up what that would be like. But for a lot of people, that experience of 14-year marriage that ends up with four wonderful kids that you didn't have a lot of help with and still don't, it becomes almost raising them on your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get through something like that, I think that's another part of the hero journey of yours that you're kind of talking about. Now, you didn't ask for it. You didn't want for it. It's not like you walked out and said, I'm going to go do this so I can create this journey. You thought your swallowing on a mic was bad. Listen to Grace. Grace.
She's thirsty.
Yeah, Grace is thirsty. But that part of it too, right? Because I know there's a ton of people out there that have struggled with bad marriages, bad relationships, abusive relationships, violent relationships, being married to an alcoholic, you know, dads and moms that are no-shows, right? Violence in the home, right? A lot of people experience that and, you know, make it through. Some don't. A lot of people don't. They still tell the narrative. They still tell that story in a very victimized way. So the hero story is not something I'm saying you went out and brought on to yourself like Odysseus, I guess. Well, maybe you're married, but you can't make people do, you know, to you what they do. So the fact that you come through that and walk out of that and to step on it, you know, walk me through the day you leave. Because the day my mom left is very vivid in my mind. You know, the typical yelling, fighting, et cetera, for hours on end and days. And the next day, I remember, you know, I remember what happened and very clearly. So for you being, how old were you?
I was 29. Yeah, I was about 30.
So 29, a mother of four, right? You kind of, what's the breakout like for you? Scary. Walk me through that.
Well, for the longest time, like off and on throughout the marriage, there would be times where I wanted to come out of the marriage, but I would fear the consequence when it came to family. You know, I didn't want any attention to them, nothing like that. But then when they cross certain lines that you've drawn in your own mind, you know, the things that you're referencing, that's when they don't really give you a choice anyway, because you've drawn that line where you go, that's it. I can't respect myself anymore for that. So now I have to actually end this and move on. Because, you know, you always, when you join a marriage, you tell yourself it's forever. So I kept having babies thinking it was forever. But it was really, I start to see so often now that I'm out of it, the times that I was still taking care of people and being the fix it, as opposed to doing it really for the right reasons, I suppose. But I mean, it was hard. Like when I recognized that I was going to actually get a divorce, I went to counseling with him for a little while, and then I just had that feeling, you know, you get that feeling. And so I was like, I'm going to go check one more time. I'm going to do something random to check myself. And so I, at 5:30 in the morning, woke up. I was going to go get some stuff to make the kids to have breakfast so that they would all just be happy to wake up to whatever they wanted. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to do a quick drive by to his parents' house. And so I drove by there, and it was 6 a.m. And all I could see was him being dropped off by a female. What are the odds at 6 a.m.? You know what I mean? So it was just like that reassurance that I needed that I was doing the right thing. And I, in my mind, never came back. I was gone forever.
In the middle of trying to go, let me try the one more, you know, make the movie scene here. Let me do, and right in the middle of that to be.
It was so game over.
Mm. But the silver lining, right? The things that don't happen to us sometimes are the blessings for us.
Oh yeah. Because I didn't leave with any regret.
Mm. Then you knew. Then you could wrap it up and move on. So
I felt like I exhausted it to its end to try to figure out how I could forgive or anything. And when I was going, I just got to be 100% and I can't just be half-assing and counseling. So today I'm going to do this. And just that last minute, let me check. And boy, was I told. So I never came back, never looked back. I can truly say I care about that person, but there's not an ounce of me that regrets the separation. Not one.
Yeah, I remember, you know, waking up to my mom standing there, and she had packed everything she could in the Ford. It was a Ford, not a Taurus, but the smaller version. Was it Escort?
Tempo?
No, it was a, I want to say it was a Ford Escort or something. Okay. Yeah, I think it was a Ford Escort, a little two-door Ford Escort. And she had packed all the shit she could fit in that Escort. And they'd been fighting for like 3 days. And, you know, so I woke up and I saw she was leaving. Pops left early for work and I saw she's leaving and she's packing her shit. She's like, I'm out. And I'm going, go, Ma. Go.
How old are you?
I was my junior year, so I don't know, 16 or something. I remember standing there going, go, Mom.
Like, never resented her?
No, hell no. I'm like, just get out. Mm-hmm. You know, get out. I'll hold the fort down. You know, I was by myself. My brother was kicked out when he was like 16, 17, so he was gone. And I was like, I'll deal with the violent guy here, you know.
Yeah.
I'll go on. I just was happy to see her leaving, you know, and she had left before and come back, et cetera. Shit, she spent nights sleeping in half-constructed homes in neighborhoods where I'd get sent to go find her when he couldn't, right, or the neighbor would, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember her leaving was that kind of foots down, I'm prepared, you know, this is gone, this mm-hmm. is over, and just, pew, just was counting ghost.
You know, I took we had shared custody in the beginning and it was quite difficult. Yeah. You know, when you have a house full of noise and kids and dog and all that stuff to an empty, you know, humongous home where you're just like, it's, you could go crazy. I went to the gym instead. Mm. But yeah, it was really difficult to go from having the kids week on, week off. And I think, you know, honestly, of all those things that we talk about, as far as which I'm thinking maybe a lot of women could relate to this, is the way that it affects the kids is harder on you than the way that it affects you yourself, as far as your ex-husband goes. And in the beginning, my son, my older one, you know, he was living with his dad and he chose to live there. And that was more painful to me than, I mean, I could go through a divorce 20 times and then to have to go through that again, that feeling of, they resent you or they're angry with you because you decided to leave.
Yeah. That's definitely hard. When you feel that as a parent, you know, for me, it was, you know, being divorced myself now that, well, I guess I'm putting it out there now. I haven't said anything, but that's basically what I was, doing all at the end of last year. And, yeah. Feeling it, I almost came to a point where, you know, because being left with my dad when I knew what was fucking coming, man. I can tell you the quick story, and any old West Orange football player that played with me would back me up. I knew the morning she left, we were doing pass Skelly, right? We're a football team and meet with a couple other ones and just receivers, linebackers, et cetera. And we played, we went and Skellied with Osceola High School, and at the time they had some brutes on the squad. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I ended up trying to fight one or two of them. It never wound up being a fight or anything, but I just was yelling at anybody.
Out of control, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck you. You know, and people are like, this dude's fucking crazy. He yeah. just like yelled at a dude twice. You know, I was trying anything to get in a fight. Just don't let me go home.
Yeah.
And I knew that day was coming. I'm like, I'm going to go home and she's gone and I'm going to have to deal with this dude. And my brother didn't live there. He lived in the Keys.
Yeah,
it was just me. And he went through suicidal thoughts. I tackled him a few times. I wrote about it in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, he went for the gun like typical night. And I tackled him before he can get there. And, you know, it was whole. I couldn't wait till my mom could kind of technically come out of hiding. Like she,
yeah.
went, she took leave from her job, went in hiding. She beat me. If you remember what a beeper was. She beat me at a phone number to call her.
I thought you said beat me. I was like, oh.
She hit me with the beeper. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was the wannabe drug dealer at the time. So I got the mm-hmm. beeper in the head. I got like six of them. The clear one, the white one, right?
I think I made lots of jokes about you boys.
Oh, wow. We're easy to joke about. And anyway, so, you know, watching him unfold like that, watching him unravel, and somebody I got to be honest, I never really respected. I was just afraid of all the time.
Yeah.
And watching him come unraveled like that was just like, holy shit. You know, I just get me out of here. And, you know, finally she got a little apartment off of Americana Boulevard over by John Young Parkway, for those of you familiar with Orlando and Park Central Apartments over there. And, you know, I couldn't wait. I got the hell out of there. We lived a little 2-bedroom over there apartment. I drove double distance to go to school. But, you know, I think the point of that, talking about that, was what he experienced. And then going through mine, that feeling you mentioned that the parents take it harder than what the kids are, et cetera. Yeah. Some do, some don't. Not sure my brother ever really got over what happened. I don't know. Maybe he saw it too, though. So he saw it at a younger age the whole time. So I don't know.
I think you get to that point where you just go, you guys are choosing this life. Just live your life and leave me out of it. Yeah, like maybe Davey's the way Davey feels.
Yeah. That was my brother's approach. He was like, would you please get a fucking divorce? You know, he's 8 years older than me.
Where you can really just see you guys are just not supposed to be together. But kind of like probably your marriage. There wasn't a ton of fighting or anything like that. I didn't really have a ton of fighting. It was just when it did happen, it was just extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you get out of this on this epic, however you could say Odysseus and feminine, you know, tale that you're experiencing. What do you do when you leave? What are you doing at the time for money? How do you support 4 kids on your own?
Well, at the time, I mean, there were plenty of times where I actually had 3 jobs, but it didn't bother me because I was just kind of used to always working. I would go to work during the day, and then this is when I got divorced, of course. The weeks that I didn't have my kids, I would do like overwork hours. You know, I would work as a cocktail server at a concert venue, and I worked at the title company doing their stuff, and then I also was a server. So I literally, one day I did have to put on 3 different outfits work-wise, but like when I worked at the cocktail place, I felt like that was my way of going out because I had kids. I could justify it and making money.
I think that's how I wound up in the club business. Well, I'm like, look, I own a little couple detail companies. I was serving on the side. Next thing you know, you're serving. I'm going, wait, I can come to the club and make money. And next thing you know.
Yeah. And you could actually just be there like, instead of being the one that's looking for something, you could still kind of feel the vibe here and there. But justify not being at home with your kid all the kids all the time, you know,
having a life, actually having, trying to find a life,
socializing somehow.
Well, a lot of mothers experience that. They don't talk about it. You know, you see them posting, are my kids the greatest? Oh, I love them. That's cute. But when you spend 24/7 with children that can't talk to you like an adult and you've been speaking baby all day, you know, or you're
I think those women forget how to behave like women.
Sure. It'd be easy to. And even for the men that stay home, that raise that, which you see a lot more of now, either side that's just around their children all day. They forget how to be social. They forget how to connect.
To me, those things that we're talking about right now, as far as like a woman forgetting who they are or the part that's sexy about them or what makes them a woman, are far more painful than having an upbringing like I had. That's why I get so like, that's nothing. What about these people that are living today as adults? I was a child. So the people that are living today as adults in a shitty situation where they could actually be out of it. That's when I go, it wasn't so bad for me. You know, the one thing that I know, this is probably not the greatest advice, but I always tried to give this to my daughters, especially, which was, if you're financially independent, you make a lot of different decisions than you normally would. If you're not, I should say.
Well, you become dependent on either side, you know, whether it's financial, and that can change people. It changes the people in the relationship. It can change a lot of things and affect a lot of things for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, major decisions that you probably wouldn't normally make. And sometimes that can be good and sometimes it can be bad. But I think that's why I was so driven to just keep working and supporting the kids. And too, when you see someone else that maybe isn't so in the same situation you are emotionally or mentally, then you make up for that. You know, you just kind of like pick up the slack if you see that it's happening. But there was times, I'm sure, when the opposite people in my life, that maybe they felt that way, that they were picking up something for me. I don't know, but I just have to assume sometimes there were times, you know, like I would love to say that, oh, I did everything so great, but I did not. I made plenty of mistakes, you know, but it really was like, I felt like someone put a bag over my head and beat me up and threw me out of the car and said, now learn this language that I've never been an adult in,
well, you were 17.
Single. And yeah, so it was really, really hard. And I think the downfall of that is it kind of makes you become that person that expects everybody else to be able to do it also. Mm. That's where I think I wish I was different. I wish I was a better explainer, a better listener, all those things. And when they require those things from me, I divert back to that mentality of nobody taught me. Hmm. And that's not the greatest, That's not the greatest thing because that was the bad thing.
As my mother always said, our greatest strength is our greatest weakness.
Yeah.
So if we can be aware of what our greatest strengths are because of certain aspects and experiences we've had, then we can also know our greatest weakness. And with awareness comes change, as Leo would say.
Yeah, like you were telling me that one day I said to you, if it bothers you, that means you're okay.
Yeah, yeah, you hit me with that. And I remembered, yeah, you hit me with it. And Leo used to hit me with that when I'd walk around. I felt guilty, you know, for some time being away from my daughter out here in the desert. And which is part of the reason I'm going back. But I'm like, fuck, I'm a terrible person, you know. And even though we talk and et cetera, and then it would be, I'm like, man, I'm fine. And you said, hey, if you feel bad and guilt, then you're okay. And I remember Leo would look at me and go, well, if you feel good, good. You're not psycho. And now you actually are not, you don't have a personality disorder.
Yeah.
So guilt, regret, and shame can be a good sign for you, at least, that you're fucking normal, that at least you're okay and you do feel bad for something.
Right. And not just that, but when you're separated from it, you start to appreciate it or recognize the value of, like for you, you love Florida now more than you've ever loved it.
That's funny. Yeah. Because well, now I've fucking lived all over the place. And
yeah, you visited tons of places and now you're like, hey, it wasn't so bad.
No, the beach is right there. I mean, there's crazy people. Don't get me wrong, but there's crazy people everywhere. And that's subjective.
Yeah.
I mean, you deal with it, whatever, wherever you go, you're going to find that aspect. But you know, for me, obviously, it's my daughter's senior year, who's really already in college anyway. But she's leaving after this last year. So it's my senior year with her and the beach isn't far. My boys are there. I miss them dearly, all of them. So, yeah, I think you almost got to do that, right? I mean, my father gave me a lot of advice over the years and it's hard to take any of it, or not least with a grain of fucking pepper.
Yeah.
And I don't mean salt, but something that generally stuck with me a lot was when he would say, look, find where you want to live, move there, and then find what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so many people go to where work is, go to where they have to be, and then try to save up one day to go to the place they want to be.
Right.
And that always rang true to me. So I've spent a majority of my life in the beginning going to places and going, all right, let me see what this is like. What is this like? All right, I think I want to live there for right now. You know what I mean? If for whatever is now. For me, shit, you never know.
Yeah. You know, you were just talking about your dad. There's one thing that he did give you that is great about you. You can fix anything. You figure everything out.
That definitely didn't come from him.
You told me that it did.
No, he couldn't fix shit.
Maybe that's why then. Maybe that's why you said it came from him, because he didn't know how to.
No, there's actually a running story in the family about my uncle Daryl, who's actually a hell of a mechanic. He could fix anything.
Yeah.
He fixed all the rides at Disney for like 85 years and like the head dude. And he comes over. My dad's putting oil with a funnel down the dipstick.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you know what I mean? Now, if it came to plumbing, right, he was a master plumber, right? And don't get me wrong, if it came to hard work, he did too. He was, you know, he's a husband at 16, you know, and a father at 16.
Oh, that's young. Yeah. See,
yeah. He's a year younger than my mother. So, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine. It's same. He's 16 years old, baby on the way, just sort of graduated high school. What do? You know, he goes into the army.
He's raising kids.
Yeah. He goes in the army, gets a whole bunch of psychotic fucking stories that happened to him, which I didn't learn until recently, by the way. So as of like this year, I learned some stories that he went through, and with my psychology training in mental health, I'm going, what the fuck? Yeah. I'm listening to these fucking special forces fucking stories he's telling me over in Guatemala, and I'm going, Jesus. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Did it make you kind of go, how are you not like you are?
Yes. It would have been going, well, why didn't you fucking say that? You know what I mean? Like, or find help for that, or God, because I've worked with tons of veterans. And let me tell you, there are very few stories. Well, actually, there's similar stories to it, a lot of them, but are very few stories of people in life that come with that kind of trauma, gruesome and heartfeltness. It's connected too. And so that changed my, you know, kind of helped change a perspective. You know, we're in, me and my dad are in a good place, right? We patch shit up. We kind of move on a little bit. But, you know, it was a closure for me that I had to do recently of what, this year, last year, something like. Yeah, I kind of closed it up, went and had lunch with him and sat with my pops for a bit. It was something, a chapter I had to close. And
yeah, what made you decide to do that?
Oh.
I mean, it's obviously been quite a long time. And so all
this
sudden,
interview just flip.
Yeah.
The interview just flip.
It's a discussion, not an interview.
Yeah, right. What made it flip?
I mean, because it's been available to you for quite a long time. So.
Well, it wasn't my first time. I was the one in the family that, despite the abuse, the separation, and everything, had this idea in my head that one day we'll all kumbaya this motherfucker and just not be married again, my mom and him. Thank God, no. But we'll be able to
normal and be able
to
be around each other.
Yeah, I kind of always hoped on that. I had this hope on that. And no, my brother was more or less like, "Are you fuck you?" You know what I mean? He's like, "I'm here with my family." You know, that's what he would be. So I kind of always walked around. It's not. I tried to patch it up a few times, and in my crazy days too. I think maybe after you get shot at and almost shot, you look at federal penitentiary. You don't do time. You know, you go through enough of those. Holy shit! How did I wind up there at 21? You know, and doing play it to where you kind of say, "What else?" You know. Let me just close that fucking book. So I had reached out at that time then to kind of go, "Hey, man.
Do you think it just wasn't satisfying, so you did it again?"
No, I reached out, and it wasn't long before some of his old ways popped up.
The first time I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was way back. I was younger, so 12 years ago.
Oh, okay. So it didn't really affect you as much as you needed is what I'm asking.
No. He hadn't changed much. He could hide it better. Yeah. But it hadn't changed much. And when I saw that, I went,
nah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, fuck that. And now, mind you, I was not a nice person.
You were a young kid.
Yeah, I was 21 thinking I was fucking Donnie Brasco and shit, you know. But at the time, so it didn't work. You know, it didn't patch up. But that was me because my brother had just had his first daughter.
And okay. So they having that family craving.
Well, yeah. Well, of course. Shit. I'd been through some shit. And I was like, we'll be fine, you know. And no, just people hadn't gotten over it. People hadn't changed. And I also hadn't gotten over it or changed at the same time. So it took another 12 years, really, before I reached out. We had a brief stint where we tried to hang out, like, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was, wasn't clicking.
This last time, though, I think... Or I should say, do you think that it made you feel like relieved? Like wasn't wrong.
Actually, it's hit me with the answer. To be honest, you know what made me do it was because what I had experienced going through my divorce. You know, I write my book. I talk all the time about when you're dealing with someone who's abused you, hurt you, etc. The only way to really move past that hurt is empathy. That's the first step, right? Is having empathy to indifference. Right. To work to some place where you really don't care. Right. To where you're really apathetic. Right. So empathy to indifference to apathetic. Right. Is where you want to get to.
Right.
I could never find irrational determinant words. I could never find.
Never.
I couldn't. I chose not to. Right. I wanted to believe the stories that I believed. Right. Because I experienced them just like I talk about. And I didn't want to face, one, show this motherfucker empathy. You know what I mean? It was like, are you out of your fucking mind? Empathy, fuck you, you know? Until I almost experienced, my divorce and what was similar.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about earlier. You don't even recognize it until you've gone through something similar to where you go, fuck, I didn't even pay attention to that.
Well, and I didn't know about the PTSD, the what he experienced as a veteran. Right. All right. Well, you got a little muted that she's leaving. Sorry about that. It was piercing, but I was in the middle of telling the story, but it's not like I haven't done a podcast by myself, so I guess I'll tell you all. Until I could experience what it was like and empathetic toward what that experience would be like to have a dream that you built, you know, out of, call it love, call it what you hope to do, et cetera, and make something from that. When that falls apart on you, it can feel like you failed at something. And now it's kind of that, what's the Chris Rock joke, right? I'm not saying I agree, but I understand. So I didn't agree with how he responded to many things as a husband or especially as a father. I didn't agree with a lot of those things. But after the experience of what it must feel like to, you know, lose a wife of 26 years by your own doing and then have to sit with that, I could almost feel the empathy for the moment, you know, wishing you could be better, wishing you could have done it better, maybe, et cetera. So until I found an empathetic approach toward, I guess, what my father experienced and what he went through, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to even be understanding, to be able to listen. And welcome back. A great timing sitting
Sorry.
Down. Now that we've dealt with the psychotic dog.
He is crazy. I apologize.
We're live. It's all good.
Yeah, I know. It's just he's crazy. But I felt bad because I wanted to hear your story.
We only lost half the viewers.
I know. Apologize.
Well, you heard it. You were walking around, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's why I think it came to that for me is I felt a touch of empathy, you know, mm-hmm. for what he must have experienced or felt in some way, mm-hmm. A loss. Compare and then add the fact being 17, not having a childhood, not chasing dreams, you know, and doing all that for the idea of the family itself. That's something that I could understand and really grab a hold of. So when that I don't know. That's why I reached out.
It brought you like a. So then when you ended up visiting with him and hearing his story again, did it sound like a different story?
You're bringing up interesting points.
I'm sorry.
yes and no. You know, there were parts of it that sounded new, parts of it that didn't. But there was more understanding, right? There was a little bit more vulnerability there, a little bit more understanding, you know. But
yeah.
I don't know. When you go through that, I can't understand what he went through. I got my own PTSD issues, you could say, from the world I chose, you know, in my early 20s. But what he experienced was totally different in a military style, right? So I don't know. I'd have to live his life to know that, you know.
Well, you know, when you feel like there's no way you can win something. You then kind of move to angry. You know, when you know, it's almost like when you see a couple and the person is just done, right? They're just, there's no fighting from one side. They're like done. No matter what you say, no matter how many times you say you're sorry, that person is just done. I think maybe what I've observed is your dad just saw that you guys were done. And it was painful for him to know that there was no convincing you guys that he was different from what you were seeing. And then the last time that he talked to you, it was like he was pouring himself to you, you know, and maybe felt different.
For sure. I mean, and look, what are you supposed to do? For me, it was about not walking around with the hate anymore.
It's just, it's more toxic than anything to you. Sure.
Now, most of that I had dealt with years before, right? My walkabout, my first one that I write about in my book, you know, that was that 2-year walkabout was the get by this shit, was the mm-hmm. let me work this out, you know. So I kind of moved past that by the time I got back from the walkabout, written the book, went back to, or got the degree, I should say. I've worked through a lot of that. But even though you can answer why, right? A lot of the times, it doesn't help. You know, you're stuck with the answer. Well, fucking now what? And even the why is subjective as shit because you're still going, well, it seems like that's the most why, right? And then you're still left with, well, fucking now what do you do?
Right.
You know, so the why had been discovered and understood possibly at the time, how to move past that, where to frame that, how to utilize that in my life mm-hmm. as something as a promoter of advancement instead of holding me back. Reasons to be pissed.
Right.
Yeah. And that helped.
I think I kind of got that that feeling when I realized that I didn't need any sort of closure with them, with my family growing up and things like that, or even with my divorce.
Because you never really had that, right? You never really had
the
closure.
I didn't. But I didn't really need it. Like, I just felt like, what is closure unless you wanted it? I don't need closure if it was never really that important to me. Like, I would need closure if something was still bothering me. And like, you know, like I have a friend that she ended our friendship and I wish I had more closure on that than something else because
I'm not a fan of the closure shit. Like, what's that fucking mean? You know what I mean? Do you got to send a postcard? Do you have to do the letter? Hell, I used to talk when I gave the speeches in the clinics would be like, look, cut off the friends. I had what I call the rule of two. Actually, I write that in the book, right? If any person or friend is two people, places, or things removed from that, they get cut too. No offense to them. They can come back later, but you got to cut them. You know what I mean? And it's no offense, but listen, you don't have to send a postcard. You don't have to text them or send them an email of why you can't be around lately because all you're doing is stirring up more drama. You know? Yeah. So literally you can make the cut and do the change, right? And I mean, close your eye. I mean, is it closure for a victim's family of murder to watch him fry? You know what I mean? Is that closure to someone? Is that necessary? Is that the justice to close? Right.
That is for some people. That's where they go, That's their thumb on you.
But is that pushed by just this, the idea of needing closure to move past? I need someone else to suffer like me. Oh, yeah,
that's
me.
Someone else telling you that you should want that.
Right. Like, well, someone needs to suffer like we suffered, and then mm-hmm. we can, you know, eye for an eye shit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm kind of talking about your idea because it's different between us. I mean, the closure, mm-hmm. you could say that that's what that was, speaking with my father, et cetera. Not much change. You know what I mean? For me,
but that's just it. I think the closure is saying that not much is going to change. Before mm-hmm. you wanted that change, you wanted to have a sense of family.
And is that where you got with yours is going, this isn't going to change. And you just kind of...
I just never, ever thought it would be different. Never did I have the hope that it would be different. So see, I never...
I did. That's where I was like...
Well, yours is understandable. Yours was just a normal thing where you wanted them to have a better relationship. Mine was like...
No, I wanted them to divorce badly. No.
Okay.
I was with my brother on that. We would be laying there and...
You didn't think to yourself, why can't you guys just like... You guys clearly have passion or nothing.
Hell no.
No.
Hell no. I was... Please, stay gone this time, mother. Please leave, you know, yeah. But and look, there's reasons why we don't, why we stay, right? It's easy to say on the outside, I think, as the son, even to say, just leave. But when you're the mother there and it's your kid, it's the family, right? It's that image.
Usually the just leave and you don't is truly just because of other people. It's never because some yourself. Mm. For me, I shouldn't say never. That's your favorite word. You know what I'm saying? Like when it affects other people is when people start changing their minds. Mm. Like even for me, I would have made lots of different decisions if I didn't have my children. I'd be probably a completely different person.
Well, we all would. And in certain ways, again, I'll quote my mother. There's no perfect life, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just like in relationships, probably everybody has about six freaking things about them where you go, oh, could you just fix that? Could you stop doing this?
What am I six?
I could go down the list.
No, I'm thinking, well, that's cool. I'm humble enough to take it, though.
It's not a bad list. I'm just saying a list in general of people that's different from what they're used to.
Yeah.
And so you just, that's what I'm saying. Everybody's got problems. Everybody's life, there's something in there where you go, what?
Yeah, that's the advice I fucking never liked from people. And fuck you if you're that person, not you, all right? If you're out there, all right? I'm not talking to you that way. Fuck you out there if you're the person that gives advice to someone. When your person, your friend, your partner is going through shit and you go, well, you know, they're starving people in Africa.
Oh, yeah, that drives me
nuts. You know, everyone's got problems.
Or how about when people just say, just get over it?
Oh, get over it. Everyone's got problems. Just don't, right? These very easy comments, right? I mean, I still say ghettos in the mind frame, right? So to compare ghettos of what somebody went through, well, this is worse than what you got, but this is our fucking experience. This is my ride. I don't know what your loop-de-loop looks like. I know what a loop mm-hmm. feels like. Yeah. So my loop is fucking crazy scary, right? And so people look at you and they're going like, oh, people got it worse, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't make it any less real to yourself because your beliefs are continuing to push that. But yeah, that guy or girl is out there. It's like, oh, people got it worse than you, you know?
Well, it's just like when people say, smile. Fuck you. That's sometimes where I want to go. Smile, just randomly. I smile all the time and I decided
think
to take
positive,
a break.
Patricia. Yes. I want you to think positive right now. Just
that's when I say I'm positive. I'd like to choke you.
Well, look, we'll stop now because look, I don't want to get too far down to that hole because I'm still a fan. If somersaults work for you, fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know, if thinking positive fucking helps, do that. I don't, you know, whatever the fuck works for you, do that. And whatever feeds you to want more, think more. I don't know, question more or think less even. I mean, that's
I'm the biggest fan of think less.
Yeah. And that's good because I think too much.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that brings a lot to the table. Also those things that was what was,
oh God, we are not back at balance. Are we? Holy fuck.
You know what? You're not a huge fan of it and I don't even care.
No, I'm just in the mood of beating that up now,
okay.
But you know me, I'll argue against something for a while because I'll learn it more by arguing against it. Then at the end, I'm like white flag. I know. I have to try to argue both sides so I can actually be competent in something. Well,
it makes you appreciate the other side.
Yeah, well, you got to argue it. So for me, I may believe something, but then I'll be number one anti it for as long as I can until someone proves
you otherwise.
No, and until I've figured out I have no real argument on that side, right? And then I'm like, shit.
Do you think that you start out that way? Why do you do that? Why do you start out on the fighting it instead of promoting it?
Well, I like to think that by questioning it, you figure out fast. Well, I'm a chess player, avid chess player, right? Mm-hmm. So when we look at a move, or I don't look at a move to say, well, what's good about that move? Right. I look at it and I make the move and go, what's shitty about that move? Why don't I want to move there? And so it becomes
You did play pretty good. I was impressed.
Thank you. I have my mom. but having a strategic outlook, I guess, maybe a pessimistic way, maybe it's a way that I just has learned works for me, a tool that works for me to dissect it backwards.
Yeah.
You know, that could possibly work for me. I don't know.
I think it does. I mean, you do that a lot, but the positive side is you actually are, it's like you're up to bat. You're going, somebody throw me something. It's not like you're going, I'm in a batting cage and everybody just watch me.
Well, now I can be an asshole because I'm greeted with, all right, if that's what you see, well, let me argue this other side, you know, cause I gotta practice what I preach. And I say, you can't be fully competent in something unless you can argue both sides, the for and the against. Most people know so much about one side, they can't argue the other side and deem themselves competent in that topic.
Right.
So for me, I can't deem myself as being competent in self, mm-hmm. unless I can argue against myself.
Yeah.
So I will present the argument against myself for a period of time until I can go, I see how the other side's going to say or may perceive it or believe it.
Yeah,
I
got you're ready for the next one.
Well, ready. I can kind of go, I get it. I get why they would say that, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think if you can argue both sides, especially about your own behavior, your own self, your thoughts, if you can at least question your own bullshit. Right. We're so quick to question the world, others, and not self.
Yeah.
And so I think that approach, I think that's who I'm really arguing. I'm gathering evidence to go, well, fuck, I got to question this guy right here. And that way I can go, all right, I know both sides.
Well, that is true. I mean, usually when you yourself have an argument, you have something to back it up. It's not just an opinion. Opinions are easy to come by.
Oh, most of the fucking world is opinions, to be honest. I mean, things that were facts change, right? We all are open, or all of it, really. I mean, is the opinion. But I don't know. Some of that noise I try to block out more recently. I try to block out others' opinions. It's, I don't know. There's something about that fucking cliche, which I'm defending, you know, is the more that you can not care about other people, the more you'll be happier. So that's one of those that sounds good that I'm kind of in the mood of going, that's bullshit right now.
I think when people say they don't care, that means it's obviously crossed their mind, so they care.
I don't know. It's so hard.
Well, there's,
Could we even not? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you can be selective because there are certain people in my life that I definitely can say, I could give two shits what they think, and I really mean it.
But if they said something nice to you, would it matter?
No.
If all of a sudden they surprised you?
No, because I didn't respect their opinion.
But what if they surprised you? People can't change?
Sure, and I'll take it with a grain of salt for whatever they say, I guess. But realistically, if I don't respect somebody, it has zero value. Mm. And if sure, they might change, and I'll accept it to where they can have that gratification. But I'm more about like seeing the change as opposed to hearing it.
Well, I'm jumping on left field now. You have a quiet passion that you talk about. A lot, which is wanting to help others, which is wanting to help women that have been through what you've been through, et cetera, or
yeah.
The realm, if whatever that realm is, what topic is it or who is it that you hope to help or wish you could do when you're talking about that, when you're going, I want to help this or help that.
I would probably say the blanket of it is confidence, like not feeling hopeless. There's so many people that feel that way in so many situations that are not hopeless. So maybe by sharing my story I downplay it a lot because that's how I feel, but it wouldn't necessarily have affected other people that way. Yeah. But there's a lot of other things that have more depth to me, like self-image or weight or things like those things that are more in my every single day life that probably more women experience than my whoop-de-doo, my cult behavior, you know, being raised in that atmosphere that was such a short part of my life. 15 years. That's what I look at it. I'm 43 years old right now. And there's other things in my life that have had a far bigger impact or have made me who I am today. That's the other things, like even being married and being able to support my children, whatever. There's so many other people in my life that have made that happen. I don't feel like I'm like, you know, when you were talking about the unsung heroes or anything like that. I am definitely a, a huge advocate of, I wouldn't be here, or I wouldn't have the strength that I have if I didn't have the support that I had in my life. You know, like the people that I did work with, or the friends that I could call and say, you're fine. I know you feel alone. Yeah, sadly, it wasn't necessarily family, but it was the people that made me feel like family, where I was able to get through it. And, you know, so many people choose to isolate themselves, or they try to have that tough, you know, demeanor. But ultimately, I think the root of everybody's strength comes from the value that they feel. And if you don't have anybody around you to remind you of your value, then you feel alone and like you're worthless. Like you can't not allow people in your life. That was the hardest struggle for me, because I wasn't ever so deep with people because I wasn't allowed to. And so when I was getting a divorce and all those things, I was so used to just, you know, being by myself. And what gave me strength was when I would surround myself with people that didn't judge you, that didn't care if you were 20 pounds overweight, that didn't care that you weren't at church today. Those were the ones that allowed me to feel that sense of freedom and not feeling like you're in shackles and be able to be that survivor. So when I see so many people, especially women, struggling with finances or self-image, those two things especially are where I go, oh my gosh, those ones are easy. Let me help you. I can tell you this, or I can teach you that. And even if you fall a couple times, you're going to be okay. Like there were times, you know, like sure, in high school, I was in pretty good shape, whatever. And even throughout a couple kids, but then, you know, like as my father died, I put on weight, and it was just, my self-image changed. That's all. Mm-hmm. So I know that I could change that. And when I did, or as I worked on it, I felt the strength to move forward, and everything just seemed to work out because I was trying to remind myself of my own value instead of thinking about the way that I thought people valued me, which was, you know, if a woman feels like she can't support her kids and she needs to do other things and, you know, on the side or whatever, there's plenty of ways to survive and get through those things that you think are hopeless. That's where I feel the passion, not so much on the other things.
Is that safe to call that a cognitive rampage?
I would say so.
I appreciate you sharing and being vulnerable, as you typically are.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah, you'll be hearing more of Patricia as we get her podcast going and get her talking a little bit more, and maybe trying to find a way to where you can actually reach out and help some of those people. I know your videos reach out to a few on the Tribe of Change, and a few people have gotten close with you, which is good. So
yeah,
I expect to hear you more on
that
here.
That makes me feel good. I do. If anybody does ever need anything, just ask me. If I can't give it to you, I can tell you where to go.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for coming on. You'll be seeing her around a lot, y'all. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're sleeping well. Hope you're getting some sunlight early in the morning. Love you.
Bye.